It's time for Wisconsin Life. Sight is something a lot of us take for granted. Kathy Schneider has been blind since birth, but she says a lack of vision isn't really the problem she has navigating the world.
I don't think much about being blind. I just am and have been so since birth. Like most things, it has its ups and downs. I've had the privilege of working with 9 wonderful seeing eye dogs in my life. But on the other hand, there's a bubble of isolation that surrounds those of us who have visible disabilities that is a pain. Recently, I went to a funeral of an amazing woman at my church in Eau Claire. My yellow lab guide dog and I got there and got in line to sign the condolence book. The isolation bubble began forming for me when the person standing by the book asked, in a surprised tone, if I was sure I wanted to sign the book. Maybe they were holding out a pen toward me, which I didn't see, or maybe the fact that I was digging around in my purse looking for my signature stamp threw them off. I suppressed my tendency to say something snarky and just said, yes, I do. Then the usher seated us in an empty pew and the bubble settled around me. Nobody sat in the row with us. Time passed, the church filled, and still we sat in the pew by ourselves. What were people thinking who knew me but sat elsewhere? There's Kathy and her guide dog. I could sit by them, but I don't usually, so would I have to help them or what? I'll just sit over somewhere else. One of the tough parts about being blind is I can't spot a friend to sit by unless they're talking loudly when I walk in. At parties, I usually roost somewhere and wait to see who comes up to greet me. My guide dog can nose people in greeting who smell interesting, but that isn't always a good thing, depending on where she noses. She often helps in bubble breaking because she's a kid magnet, and then parents come forward to drag the kids away. Friends with other disabilities tell me it's not just blind folks who live in the bubble of isolation. After the funeral, several people said hi, and we chatted briefly as we exited the church. Sometimes the isolation bubble is broken in amazing ways. A fall trip to a local farmer's market to pick out gourds as little gifts for friends is a good example. After having great fun pawing through all the gourds with all their interesting twists and turns, I went to pay the Hmong farmer for my choice gourds. He said, no pay. He was giving them to me. I said, no, I'll pay. He said, no again, and tapped his heart and said, gift from the heart. I have a hard time accepting charity, but this was different. Clearly, he knew the truth of Anne Frank's quote, no one has ever become poor by giving. I relished giving the gourds out and telling each recipient the story of this man who had reached through my bubble of isolation. As I trotted home from the funeral, I mulled over how it could have gone better. Should I wear a sign that says, please speak to me? I don't often bite. We are people of action in Wisconsin. Now that you've heard my story, next time you see a person with a visible disability sitting alone, you'll know how to break the isolation bubble, and I'll bet you'll do it.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janna. Catch more Wisconsin Life on Wisconsin Public Television Monday nights at 8 o'clock. You can find more information at wisconsinlife.org.
Well, Mike Walsh joins us now in the studio. He's losing his sight, and he's been traveling the world, educating people about sight issues and just seeing the world as part of his Flight for Sight campaign. Mike, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Now, first, what is the condition that may cause you to completely lose your vision?
Well, I have a condition. It's called Usher Syndrome Type 2, and being syndrome, that means more than one thing. So first off, I have a hearing loss, moderate to severe, and that is corrected with hearing aids. I can hear pretty well. And then the other part is retinitis pigmentosa. That is a degenerative condition where I'm slowly losing my sight. The photoreceptor cells in the retina are that detect light have been dying, and so it all starts with night vision. So everything gets darker at night. About 2 years ago now, I was stopped being able to drive altogether, and also the condition continues where your peripheral vision starts to go, and so I stopped driving because I stopped being able to make turns during the day, and so that became harder. And so forth.
And if I may ask, do you know when you'll completely lose your sight, if ever?
Yeah, so there's different various conditions within the condition. Retinitis pigmentosa itself, it varies for everyone. It is rare with people who have Usher syndrome type 2 to lose their sight completely. But even no matter how bad I get, I recently attended the Visions Conference for the Foundation Fighting Blindness. I've been hearing all sorts of things about clinical trials and cool technology that will help assist me in the future, however worse it gets.
And we just heard from someone who's been blind since birth, who felt a sense of isolation when people see someone different in a way, someone with a disability. Does that worry you? Does that go through your head as you listen to that piece?
Yes, that was interesting. And if it's funny with blind, those with vision issues, often it's not visible that they have those issues unless they have a guide dog with them or a cane. And that is, I am in that weird transition where sometimes I don't even use a cane and I'll walk around and I'll bump into things. And, you know, that's just a reminder that I should be having my cane. But the more familiar I am with the place, the less I like to use it. However, having had a disability, so to speak, my entire life, I've had hearing aids my entire life. I was diagnosed when I was about 3 that I had a hearing problem. And, I've always kind of, it's always been a part of my life, and so I'm pretty secure in having a disability. You know, I use a cane, and it's all good, and my brother has the same thing, so we all go through it together. It's just it's a normal part of life for me.
So when did you decide to start the Flight for Sight campaign?
Yeah, so that happened basically early January, or mid-January. I had this opportunity to travel. I had this pass through Delta through a friend who's a flight attendant. And I had this certain love for social media, and so I had this past social media, and I love to travel, and so I just sort of smushed all three of those things together, and the idea of flight, sight, what should I call it, mic seeing. A friend of mine came up with Flight for Sight, and you should raise awareness. So I used social media, I crowdsourced where I went and what I did, and that was a way to get people involved and be like, oh, he's doing this to raise awareness for vision issues. And so I've had fun with social media and, yeah, using that.
And I want to talk some about your travels. I saw one of your highlights was Ethiopia. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, Ethiopia was a really interesting, excellent experience that someone posted on my wall. It was that day that I launched it. He said, you know, we're here living in Ethiopia. You should join us. He works for the embassy, and he was telling me all these different charities he could take me to. And so one of the things I visited was the School for the Blind in Ethiopia, where all the children from all over the country that have vision issues, and most of them can't see very much at all, came to the school. And I was able to go there and learn about their needs. Some of the simple things that they needed were just canes. And some of them that did have canes, they had short wooden sticks, and it was interesting to see the need, and they were asking for something as simple as cassette recorders so they could record their teachers. And but yeah, Ethiopia was a very interesting experience, and thanks to my friend Dan Swift that I was able to go there.
And it's amazing. You're just kind of putting the word out there in social media, and people come to you with these paths. How do you choose what path to pursue then?
Yeah, so I started off with my first post, and then I was basically like, you know, tell me a location, and the locations with the most likes is where I'm going to go. And then I also combine that with the interesting comments, you know, like Ethiopia. Oh, that sounds like a really great idea. So the most liked comment was a friend posted New Zealand, and that got about 36 likes within a couple of days. I was like, wow, I guess I'm going there. And then the timing was interesting in that people were like, it was a few days before the Super Bowl, and they were telling me to go there, and I was just like, okay. And so I attempted to go to the Super Bowl, but I wasn't able to get a ticket. Right. But I went to New York, and so that was fun.
A lot of this sounds expensive. How do you do? Are you able to do this on the cheap, or just with people you meet up with online? How does that work?
Yeah, so like I said, the pass with Delta is a tremendous help. So that helps with the airlines. And then, yeah, I'm able to meet friends, and I see friends throughout the journey, and a lot of them offer me a place to stay. And a lot of people hear about this, and so they want to help. So it's an amazing experience that people just helping out. You know, humans are beautiful, and yeah.
And San Francisco, I think, was another recent stop. You had some great experiences there.
Yeah, I did. All because of one post. One individual, a college friend of mine, posted on his wall, and he has 350,000 followers. And so that led to all these experiences, to another woman who knew I was coming out, and she was able to give me some tickets for various things, including the Facebook conference that was going on. So I had a great time and there, and I continue to learn about the Facebook platform, how I can use it better. And San Francisco, there's so much technology going on, and I'm starting to look into how technology is helping us with vision issues. It is the center of, you know, the Ubers and the Lyfts of the world. And so just being able to use that technology, press a button to have someone show up to pick you up, it's just truly, truly amazing. And I'm looking forward to seeing that technology grow.
You know, we started off talking about this isolation bubble that probably a lot of people with a disability or not feel at some point. You are tapping into something maybe that we're just on the edge of out there. A lot of people have the door open to connect with people they don't know.
Yeah, social media, the internet is truly amazing. One of the things I really started to work with in the past few months is Facebook groups. They are an excellent way to make a rare disease not feel so rare. Mm-hmm. So I was able to talk to other people with the condition. I've never met anyone with Usher syndrome before besides my brother, and that's the last thing I think about when I think of my brother. So I was meeting people with Usher syndrome online, and recently at the conference in Colorado, and we're able to talk about it, and we're able to grow on each other's experiences and so forth. And we learn from each other, and we talk about research that's going on and so forth. And it's really interesting.
Mike, just briefly, what's your next stop?
My next stop actually is next week. I'll be attending the family conference, Usher Syndrome Family Conference at Harvard Medical. I'll be speaking on a panel there. And it is in conjunction with the International Symposium on Usher Syndrome. It is going to be the largest Usher Syndrome gathering ever in history. The first time they're combining these two conferences, and that'll be an interesting experience next week.
Mike, thanks for joining us, and happy travels.
And thank you for having me.
That's Mike Walsh. He's the creator of the Flight for Sight campaign. You can find more info at flightforsight.co.